Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we talked about yesterday, this report that came out on Monday that basically said, you know, we knew this was a bad idea from the start. It was doomed. Everything to do with our hubris, everything to do with not understanding the culture, a whole bunch of things. And I think Monday, an interesting day for them to come out with the what we need to learn from the last 20 years, especially what happened yesterday. I'm here to share some thoughts on, well, what did go wrong? What should we learn from this? And maybe what we should do in the future. That's why I've asked Larry Korb to come talk with us. Larry is a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. He was also an assistant secretary of defense back in the early 80s. Somebody that I defer to on military issues. Larry, thanks for taking time for us.
My pleasure.
So have you seen this report that, you know, basically, you know, it's 124 pages of, we should have known this was going to happen. We knew all along this was doomed from the start. Have you seen this?
Yes, I have.
And do you agree that we should have known this from the start?
Well, I agree that you should have taken that into account when you made your decision to leave. In other words, I spent 24 years in the Navy, and, you know, we always basically plan for the worst, hope for the best. So given what was the situation there, you should have assumed that it could go downhill very, very rapidly and plan for that. You also, if you were going to evacuate and leave, I know why President Biden picked the, you know, the September 11th deadline, you know, because that's when the attacks came. But in terms of from a military point of view, you should have waited till December because they don't do much fighting in the cold weather. It's, you know, this is the height of the fighting season. So if you were gone then, they'd have a little bit of time, you know, to adjust to it. And you should have said, okay, if it does go downhill rapidly or much worse, you know, how are we going to deal with it? And then finally, you can't just focus on the Americans. You got to get all the Afghan people who helped us, the translators, and helped us deal with the Taliban military threat. You got to get them out too.
Right.
And again, you hadn't planned for that. You could have started taking them out even before you announced that you were going to leave on a certain date.
Yeah, but the argument then to that is, you know, Joe Biden did try and extend it because wasn't May 1st the original exit date? Wasn't this what the previous administration had negotiated that we were going to be out by then? And Biden kind of held it off a little longer?
Well, the agreement we made with the Taliban would be we'd be out in a year and a half after we made the agreement with them. And their part of the deal was they were supposed to stop fighting us, which they did. They were supposed to also negotiate with the Afghan government, which they didn't. And so you really didn't have to, you know, keep that date. It was, you know, Trump actually wanted to, but his military and his civilian leadership talked him out of it. So he wouldn't have, even if he had been reelected, it would have been very hard to get out by May 1st. But you did, you know, again, you did want to leave because the Taliban had kept their part of the bargain. They weren't killing Americans. You know, we haven't had a casualty, a death there in over a year and a half. And the other thing is you knew you had to leave sometime. And if not now, when?
Right.
So, I mean, I think that, you know, you didn't have to do it. I mean, Biden picked September 11th for, you know, to say, you know, symbolic reasons rather than security reasons.
Now, but here's the thing. We go back to what we talked about, you know, during the break. Who could have predicted that the Afghan army that we've spent 20 years training, we've spent 20 years arming with the best technology they can get. We've given them an air force. We've done all this stuff. Who would have thought that in such a short period of time that they wouldn't have stood up for themselves?
Well, again, you would have hoped that they would. The chances didn't seem great that they would, you know, disassemble so quickly. But when you undertake an operation like this, you've got to plan for the worst. You have to say, well, it's not likely to happen, but what will we do if it does? Yeah. And I think that was the failure. General Milley today in his press conference said nobody predicted they'd fall in 11 days. Okay. But the fact of the matter is it was possible, and I'm surprised from a military point of view they didn't say, well, what will we do if in fact it does?
Exactly. I mean, when I heard him say that, I'm going, well, nobody? Don't you have a lot of really smart people who are supposed to be gaming out every possible scenario? And isn't one of those a total collapse? Because, you know, in some of the people that I've talked to, they're saying we should have known because the country horribly corrupt. The Taliban has been paying people for a long time. There's a long history of threatening families. That there's a lot here that we didn't really take into account. So it's not really surprising that it fell like this.
Well, again, you can understand why the military, which has spent so much time and blood and energy, didn't think that would happen. But you go back and you look at these generals, each of them tell us, oh, we're winning, it's going good, just hang on a little longer. They've all been wrong. And so I think that you have to take that into account. It's just like, you know, when I was in Vietnam and Westmoreland was, you know, talking about how great things were going, you know, we looked and said, who's he talking about? Doesn't he know, you know, what's happening? So, again, yes, I can understand why they didn't think it would, but you got to, if you're the administration, you got to say, okay, fine, I hope you're right, but let's plan in case you're not right.
Right. And that's the thing that gets me is, you know, I had my good friend Rich Ojeda on the program the other day, and I said, look, you know, what's your thoughts? And he goes, we never lost a battle in Afghanistan, but we lost the war. Because there were no clear objectives. They kept constantly moving the goalposts, no exit strategy, all of these things that set us up from the beginning. So for me, the lesson to be learned in all of this is maybe we should have a clear declaration of war, which we didn't have in this case, and a clear agenda and a clear path forward. Just seems kind of logical. Now, look, I'm not a military person. I don't know anything. I know nothing, but it seems logical.
Well, again, you can go back and you say, why did it fail? People forget that we drove the Taliban out of Afghanistan. And then we decided to undertake nation building, create a unified nation in the graveyard of the empires. And, you know, and then we compounded it because we started on that. Then we diverted our attention to Iraq. And so that allowed the Taliban to come back. You know, I was in New York on 9/11. And after the attacks, I was working at the Council on Foreign Relations. We got a call from the Iranian ambassador to the UN because, you know, we don't have diplomatic relations. And he said, tell your government that we hate the Taliban and we'll help you get rid of them. They were the first country to condemn the attacks of 9/11. They did. And what happened in early 2002, we put them on the axis of evil. You know, the first time the ambassador invited me for dinner, the next time there was no dinner or anything like that. So again, you go back and you look at those mistakes. Obama tried to rescue it. He put more troops in, but he put a date for them to get out. Well, the Taliban said, okay, we'll wait. You know?
After all, they live there.
Yeah. So again, I think that there's been an awful lot of, you know, of mistakes. We've done some good there. The lives of the people, you know, are better off. Maybe the Taliban are not going to act as horribly as they used to. They seem to be giving some indications. When I went to Afghanistan in 2011 as part of an international mission to try and get negotiations going, I asked the Taliban guys, well, how will you treat women if you come back in? He said, don't worry, we won't be any worse than your allies, the Saudis.
That doesn't give me great hope.
Yeah.
but here's the thing, and I don't expect them to do anything right away. I expect them to be kind of calm for a little while. But eventually I do expect them to go back to their old ways. And, you know, the fear that, that some of my conservative friends who want to go back, I mean, there are actually people that I've met who say we shouldn't be leaving. We should be sending more people. We should be doubling and tripling and quadrupling down because we're going to win. And I still don't know what grand prize we're going to win. But, you know, there's this thought that, that, you know, we can change that. And, you know, I look at this report again, you know, this American exceptionalism idea that we can do anything. We can change a nation that's been this way for, you know, thousands of years somehow because we're so exceptional that we can change it. And we can't, Larry. I don't believe we can change it.
Well, we have two objectives. One, we hope that the Taliban treat the people reasonably. The other is that it doesn't become a haven for Al-Qaeda or ISIS, because that's the real threat to us. Again, what we need to be doing, and we should have done this ahead of time, work with the countries in the region, because either Russia, China, India, or wants them to become a haven for, you know, Al-Qaeda. I mean, the Chinese say, well, if they become a haven for Al-Qaeda and ISIS, they're going to go over and support the Uyghurs who we're, you know, keeping in concentration camps. The Iranians don't want to see a whole bunch of people coming into their, you know, country either. The Indians are concerned about what would happen in Kashmir. So those countries, we should have been working with them, say, okay, guys, we're going to leave. Here's the deal. Let's, you know, get together and have a, you know, you tell your Taliban friends if they come back in, you know, this is how they should act.
Right. But is this a moment for us to maybe step away from this entirely? And go, you know what, your backyard, your problem. You know, this is your backyard. You deal with your problems.
Well, they have more media concerns than we do, because ISIS and Al-Qaeda are not going to just go after Americans. They attack a lot of countries. Our main goal is to keep them from attacking us or our allies, because, again, we are a big target because we're kind of the number one country in the world, you know, and so they might want to be more willing to attack us.
So, you know, politically back here, and I know you're not a political person, but, you know, I'm looking at what the fallout is and the attacks on Biden. You know, this is all Biden's fault. He did all this. And without, you know, thinking about, this is a 20-year mistake, in my view. There's a lot of blame to go around at every level for every decision. But for right now, the arrows are being slung at Biden. And it's my view that in the long term, I think things are going to turn around in his favor, and he's going to be the guy who got us out of there, because there have been a lot of people saying, hey, we got to get out. He was finally the guy who said, we're getting out.
Yeah, I agree that, you know, again, if it doesn't become a haven for Al-Qaeda and we don't have any terrorist attacks, he'll be overcome. But the problem you have is people look at a man, and hopefully soon a woman, in the Oval Office, and they say, are they in, can they really do things well and all this? And this was just horribly handled, even though we agree we should get out. Are you guys competent? I mean, I've talked to a lot of Biden supporters who feel that his national security team is not up to the job, not the generals, but, you know, I mean, how much experience, you know, is Jake Sullivan, Henry Kissinger? You know, or is, you know, Tony Blinken, George Shultz? You see what I mean? That in terms of the people that they have who are the key players on the national security team.
No, it's an excellent point. But again, you know, Biden is supposed to be the guy who has all of the foreign policy chops. He's got 40 years plus experience here. This is what we're hoping on, that his long experience is going to be the one that navigates us through this. And like I said, you know, I'm hopeful that down the road we look back at this and say it was tragic what happened over the last couple of days, but it was still the right decision to get out.
Yeah, the other thing he did, he stayed on vacation. Good gosh. Yeah. I mean, given the fact he's been a politician since 1972, no, you just people. I mean, you know, all of the
optics.
Opponents are using that against him. Yeah, he went on, and then after he gave the speech, he went back again. I mean, that was just not, you know, the way to do it.
No, I'm right there with you. But one of the other lessons that I think need to be learned is understand we were at war for 20 years, and the vast majority of people in this country felt nothing. Maybe we saw a news report. Maybe we were asked to put a yellow ribbon on the back of our car that say we support the troops. Maybe we have to stand for a minute longer after the national anthem at the ball game. But the reality is none of us really sacrificed for this war. So is it part of the lesson have to be that if we're going to get involved in another long conflict that are going to send our young men and women over to die in some foreign place, that at least we should struggle a little bit, a little suffer, a little sacrifice? I mean, I go back and I was looking at the tax rates. Truman raised the top marginal tax rate to 92% to pay for Korea. Johnson raised the taxes up to 77% to pay for Vietnam. George Bush cut taxes on the very wealthy and said, go shopping. I'm sorry, going shopping is not sacrifice for the people in this country.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly. We should have a war tax, because not only the cost of those brave men and women who, you know, fought there and volunteered to go, you have $2 trillion in veterans care that you're going to have to deal with, because in Vietnam, for every, you know, four people wounded, one died. Now for every 26 wounded, only one passes. So you're going to have an awful lot of, people there. I don't know, again, if you realize this, but when we were in Iraq and Afghanistan and those wars were not going well, the Navy and the Marines gave 40,000 moral waivers in order to get people to volunteer. And I argued then that we should have, you know, gone back to a draft. I think, you know, that would have gotten people to ask the questions, because even if you don't get drafted, you know, you might, and the families are going to say, wait a second here, my son and under the law, my daughter, you know, could have to go.
Yep. No. And this is one of those things I was saying back then. That, you know, this is way too easy. It's way too easy to send other people's kids, usually poor people's kids and poor working class kids, into these battles. You never see the top hogs sending their kids. It's always the poor and the working class that fight these battles. For me, that I'm hoping is the lesson that eventually gets learned out of this. Although I got to tell you, our media structure is keeping it right between the binary choice of blaming Trump and blaming Biden. And I don't really blame either of them. I blame everybody from the start. Just my thought. But Larry, I appreciate your thoughts, your time. Always great talking with you, my friend.
Okay. Anytime. Take care. Be well.
Thanks so much, Larry Coerb. Senior fellow there at the Center for American Progress. Love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break right here, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.